When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some, I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time, turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding out, 5-hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you, and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com. It's
better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at tmobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to 4 lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device credit service ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
Why get all your holiday decorations delivered through Instacart? Because maybe you only bought 2 wreaths, but you have 12 windows. Or maybe your toddler got very eager with the advent calendar. Or maybe the inflatable snowman didn't make it through the snowstorm. Or maybe the twinkle lights aren't twinkling. Whatever the reason, this season, Instacart's here for hosts and their whole holiday haul. Get decorations from the Home Depot, CVS, and more through Instacart and enjoy free delivery on your first 3 orders. Service fees and terms apply.
TJ, good morning. How you holding up, buddy?
Good morning. I'm holding up well. How are y'all?
Doing all right.
Yeah.
Tough one.
Must have been a long flight home, because that was a tough one, yeah.
Yeah, it was a long flight, but I was asleep, so I had to sleep that one off.
Let's talk about your physical, how you feel this morning, how much punishment you absorbed. A couple times it looked like you were late getting up. But just, you never know, the day after an NFL game, how you feel. You were targeted 9 times, caught 4 passes. How were you physically this morning?
Physically, a little sore. That's to come after a game. But I'm all good, though.
You know, I got to tell you, I just wonder what it's like for you in the huddle when you're looking at all these offensive linemen. I know you know everybody on the team, but this is not the group you thought you were going to play with. Seemed like there was a lot of makeshift, and then obviously seeing different players go out. Darnell Wright has been a mainstay, and he was hurt in the game and apparently has an MCL strain. So it's just worrisome, the amount of injuries, and maybe nowhere is that more apparent than, you know, with Braxton Jones out, with Wright going out, with the group that you have on that line.
Yeah, it's tough when you start losing people in key spots, but it's the next man mentality. So whoever the backup is and has to come in the game to be the starter is going to have to play with their A game.
So last week, obviously, there was a lot of conversation, DJ. You were part of it. A lot of the leaders spoke out and in a way that questioned maybe the decision-making process from whether it was Matt Eberflus or Shane Waldron or a combination of both. Where is this team in terms of being together? And obviously, you know how it works in the NFL. You lose 2 games in a row in the manner with which you guys have lost them, and you start to wonder from the outside, has Matt Eberflus lost his football team? So I'll ask you, has Matt Eberflus lost his football team?
I want to say no. The message yesterday was that we know we 4-4 now. It's just like being 0-0. But you just got to go out there and start stacking wins how we did. And that's the best thing we can do is win and then let the chips fall how they fall after we do so.
You know, the big concern coming out of the Washington game was that somehow you may have lost 2 games in one fell swoop, right? That you lost, not only did you get people injured, but the way you lost that game, the reaction everyone had to it, was going to carry over. Do you believe that the Arizona loss was connected in any way to the failed Hail Mary?
No, I don't think that was connected at all. I think everybody wanted to go out there and just try to get past the losing feeling, especially how we lost to the Commanders, but we ended up losing this game. So we got to really shake back and get out this losing way that we have right now.
Let's talk about on the field, because the offense started and it looked like you were moving the ball coming out in the first quarter, and there has to be an emphasis on that because of your struggles in the first quarter of games. Up-tempo seemed to work. Was that an emphasis? Do you feel like it's better to start the games, maybe going no huddle, up, increasing the pace, because Caleb might be better in those situations?
It's whatever it gets us going. You know, the emphasis on us is starting fast, so we got to start fast and just do our jobs, and we got to get a first quarter touchdown in the book soon.
I'm curious, DJ, did you guys feel going into that game that you had an advantage with your receiving core against their corners in particular? And maybe you feel like that every game, but I really thought that the group that you have, your room, was going to be able to dominate them a lot more than you did. And they, you know, went into the game having allowed 52% on third down, and you guys converted 3 of 14. That's 21.4%. How did they get the advantage over you guys? It was just a strange one.
I don't know, but we go into every week feeling like we should be dominating on the outside, and that's just our mentality week in and week out. But on the third down aspect, you know, they did a multitude of things, and they would have, like, five DBs on the field almost all game, because Buddha is just a roamer, and he just makes things right. So it's tough to say what coverage they're in, because he's just flying around doing his thing.
This segment with DJ Moore is sponsored by Busey Bank, building business, growing wealth since 1868. So Caleb Williams post-game talked about Matt Eberflus's message to the players and the team, and he also referenced a couple veterans stood up and spoke as well because of the nature of the loss. Were you one of those veterans, and how would you describe the post-game message?
I wasn't one of those veterans. None of the captains really spoke. It was just an open floor thing. Two people had good messages, and we listened to them, and we're going to go from there, because we are 4-4, like what's said in the locker room, and it can go either way, but we wanted to go the right way.
Yeah, I just wonder, do you look at the box score? Or are you aware of what's happening in the game? For instance, Cole Kmet wasn't targeted with a single pass, and usually he's a bigger part of it. Now, you know, I get it. You guys were having, as we said, troubles converting on third, but can you believe he didn't get a single pass thrown to him?
I didn't know that. When you dialed into the game and want some plays to happen, you just not worried about what's all going on the field and what's happening, who's getting the ball. You just want to know, like, why isn't it happening.
Right.
So Tyreek Stevenson did not start. He ended up playing more than expected because of the injury to Terrell Smith. And you go back to last week, it was a source of a lot of conversation. And I wonder, as a leader, as a captain, were you involved, was the leadership council involved in talking to Matt Eberflus about discipline over Tyreek Stevenson and the situation in Washington? And were you comfortable with the way that was handled?
A little bit, but the final say-so came from Eberflus, and I think he handled it well. And then when Reek had to go back in the game, he did his thing and proved that he can be the player that he is.
You know, the other strange element of the game was that Caleb Williams ended up getting pressured by 16 different players, according to Next Gen Stats. In other words, he stayed into the game after they had started substituting players. Were you surprised that he kind of finished that game, played the whole game? On television, they were calling for him to come out after Murray came out of the game.
I'm not surprised. We're going to fight to the end, and that's everybody in the organization. Nobody was going to come out, and that was just us as an offense just doing that.
He was sacked 6 times, and it was after they had replaced Kyler Murray. Is it fair to wonder that from the outside? Because it really looked like a reckless decision, because especially when he got up limping.
Yeah, I mean, that could have happened at any point. But I get what the outside may be thinking. And I mean, everybody just got that competitiveness in them to go out there and try to make something happen, even no matter what point of the game is at.
Is he okay? Has he stopped limping? Do you know?
I don't know yet. Hopefully he has.
Was he limping on the plane? Did he limp to the bathroom at any point?
He was asleep.
I know. I'm joking. Hey, DJ, I got to tell you, I felt sick to my stomach when I heard that Montez Sweat couldn't go. We were doing the pregame show, and that word broke with the inactives, and I thought, you know, we've talked quite a bit about you being the best player on offense and him being the best player on defense. And with apologies to Jalen Johnson, I know he's a great player too. But it seems like since Sweat came here, that defense has been even better. And then when he was a late scratch, you just kind of felt sick to your stomach.
Yeah, when I seen my Tez not dressed, I was like, what's wrong? But I really don't know what's wrong with Tez. It got to be something that's bothering him, and hopefully we get him back soon.
DJ, I'm sure as a veteran, you've been part of offenses that have struggled and made, you know, subtle changes to the approach with play calling, maybe change play callers in season. Help us kind of sift through this in terms of, obviously, Shane Waldron's been the source of a lot of criticism publicly. And I wonder, how difficult is it to change play callers in season? And is this something that you think is worth considering for an offense that is struggling now?
I don't think that'll happen. We just got to go back to the drawing board and start putting people in different positions to be able to move the ball and just stay on the same page and stick together.
You know, it just felt like nothing was really working for you guys, right? I mean, you weren't dominating with the run. You weren't, you know, really getting a lot going in the passing game. It was just one of those games where it felt a little bit flat. What did it feel like on the field?
It felt at times that we could do certain things, yeah. and then we come back out and we couldn't do those things again. So it's just give and take of the game and knowing how it's going and how we got to go about it.
I wondered about halftime. We talk about momentum all the time, and my sense was watching that after that 53-yard run, the Cardinals seized all of the momentum at that time, and going into halftime, that had to be almost demoralizing. And I just wonder what happened at halftime, and was there a sense that somebody had sort of let the air out of the balloon?
Nobody had felt like the air was out of the balloon. We knew we was getting the ball back, so we wanted to try go down and score, and then come back out and double dip on the score, so the game would be closer.
I don't know if you saw overnight, but Luke Getsy got fired by the Raiders. They fired the offensive coordinator, their quarterbacks coach, and I think they fired three coaches on offense overnight. Does that send a shockwave when you see, you know, Robert Saleh got fired earlier in the year? You look at what's going on in the league. Do you find that really surprising? Do you wonder what that would be like? And I'm sure you know Getsy. That's a rough one for him.
I've been a part of coaches getting fired mid-year,
yeah.
Or at the games like that. So, I mean, it's the business. Owners and organization fans want to win now. So, I mean, it's just all a part of the business.
How involved are veteran receivers, veteran offensive players like you and Keenan Allen, maybe Mercedes Lewis, other guys who have been around for a while, week to week involved in the game planning and maybe they're asking you what you like so you can get, whether it's a scripted first 15 or just kind of get a sense of what you like on certain third down situations with matchups. Are you involved with formulating that game plan on a weekly basis?
No, we get the game plan. We look at it. We go out there and practice it and see how we feel about it. If there's any nuances that we want to add to it, or little special things that we want to do within the route or for the pass game, then that's what we say on the field and just try to go over it in meetings and implement it the next day that we have the same stuff.
DJ, do you monitor the trade deadline at all? Are you interested in, I mean, you got friends all over the league, and I don't know that the Bears are planning on doing anything, but I'm just curious, like, how much, you know, tomorrow is not only the trade deadline, it's the election. Is it a big day for you?
No, I'm not really worried about the trade deadline. I do have friends across the league, but I don't know if they will be traded. And yeah, voting is tomorrow, so I think everybody should go do that.
Have you voted? What is that like for a guy who has residences in probably two different states? And obviously the league has been active in trying to raise awareness and reminding people to get out and vote. From your perspective, how important is it, and what have you done?
Right now, I probably go to the ballots today and knock it out, because I know it's going to be jam-packed tomorrow, and I don't really feel like being in a long line.
You might have to wait in one today. It's going to be pretty busy, I think.
You never know.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I think you should have voted in North Carolina, personally. if I had a residence there, that's where I'd vote. But it's I got my vote in on Friday. It's easy to do. Just go down there, get in line, and, you know, it was fairly quick. I didn't have any problems with it. So I encourage you to get that done, and I'm glad that you're encouraging everyone to get out and make a decision.
Yeah, because it's definitely an important one. So yeah. I got to knock that out.
Well, that's good. Back to the trade deadline for a moment. When you look at the players that have been moved – and I don't have the numbers in front of me, but it seems like there have been a lot of wide receivers, some big-name wide receivers on the move. And I'm just curious, when you look at positions that are – is maybe edge rusher might be the easiest position to adapt to. We saw Kem Robinson make his switch, arrive on a Tuesday and start on a Sunday playing left tackle for the Vikings. But why do you think so many wide receivers have been moved this year before the deadline?
Just bringing in help for the quarterback. You can never have too many playmakers on one team. So the pass catchers were the quarterback's best friend. So I can see that being why there's a spike in receivers being traded.
You had a weird week last week because we talked to you and I didn't think you said anything controversial, whatever. But obviously you guys had to meet with the coaches, the leadership group, and you talked to Hallis Hall, and you said that the message, part of the message, was that everything had to stay in-house. Are you good with that? Do you feel like you've ever said anything kind of out of line? I mean, I didn't think you were out of line at all, but apparently the message is it stays in-house.
Yeah, I don't feel like I have said anything. Yeah. Out of line or detrimental to the team. So, but I get the message behind it for obvious reasons. But yeah,
I think what Molly's saying is keep talking. Please.
I'm saying, DJ, what is the secret information you're not sharing with us?
Yeah, Declan. You know, yesterday there were a lot of things that were surprising in that game, but the one thing I did not expect to see, DJ, was hail in Arizona. In a building that should have had the roof closed. How surprising was that, and what was it like to play in hail when you're in Glendale, Arizona?
Yeah, it was kind of odd. I thought it was rain at first, and then I just started feeling like the little hail balls hit my helmet, and it was on the field. It was like a good size too, so it was kind of weird, and the roof took forever to close.
You don't expect that.
Yeah, they got to get a new weatherman, don't you think? I mean, they
fire the weather coach.
Yeah, that's right. The weather coach has to go. All right, DJ. Hey, thanks a ton. It's always fun to talk to you. We appreciate you always being there for us on Monday mornings, win or lose. And it's a tough time of year, as you say, so we appreciate it.
Thank you, DJ.
Hey, no problem.
That is DJ Moore, the Bears wide receiver.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allow 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the extra point with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
TJ Edwards shared his thoughts about the Bears team meeting on Monday right here on The Score.
You know, Floof's kind of right. He leads the team meetings and things like that. But I just felt like we weren't sugarcoating anything. You know, we weren't. And again, you know, stuff that kind of was said, whatever, I'll keep in-house. But I also think that it was just very genuine and real. And it was a understanding that, you know, from coaches to players, we all need to be better, you know. And I think when every single one of us can kind of, you know, look within ourselves first and understand that, but also get the feeling that it's not like, you know, everyone's thinking, you know, it's this guy or that guy. It's all of us being in this together and trying to get this fixed. And that's going to start with tomorrow's practice.
All right. Your reaction to what you just heard from TJ Edwards, and do team meetings reflect a team that's falling apart or one that might be coming together?
Well, I think the Bears are closer to falling apart than coming together. I respect TJ Edwards, and for the record, he offered that during that interview. It was the way that he opened. He shared the detail of a team meeting. He shared a lot of things that you wonder this week if they would have been so open about. I am curious, as I said at the beginning of the show, if that team meeting, whether it was the purpose of the team meeting or it came up during it, but I do wonder if DJ Moore, the clip that everyone has seen by now, him running off of the field and staying off of it, even though he was out of bounds and he was maybe gimpy, but he was back on the field to play later. I wonder if the DJ Moore incident was addressed by Matt Eberflus, if the meeting talked about the need for accountability and effort and optics and things that reflect leadership and commitment and attitude and effort. Things that you didn't really see from the Bears. They didn't have the execution and effort that matched the Cardinals' intensity. So I think team meetings are good if they work. We don't know if this one will work for the Bears. They're reeling. They're out of control. A downward spiral, all the ways you want to describe it. Huge week for the Bears against a team, the worst team in football. They have to take care of business at home. Maybe the team meeting will be a spur to that. If they win, we can use it. If they lose, another meeting? I don't know. You're running out of time.
Well, I guess part of this is define team meeting, right? I mean, it would be almost as crazy if the Bears hadn't had a meeting following that loss on Monday morning back up at Halas Hall. If reports, we just went in, talked to the trainers. We didn't even watch the tape. that would be like the hubbub made over the lack of 15 plays. Right? I mean, you got it. The players only meeting, I think, are the meetings that you're looking to avoid, except if you're Caleb Williams. Something else that kind of got, in my opinion, brushed under the rug a little bit because of all the bad things happening with the Bears was Caleb Williams' comment about a week or two ago that the really good teams, they're led by the players. Mm-hmm. The players are the leaders on the really good teams. Okay, well, you know, you got to have a meeting. The Bears are headed in the wrong direction. Another analogy, the home run that was heard around the world in the World Series a couple days ago, and, you know, the Yankees really kind of sort of recovered, but not enough. They didn't get swept, but they won one game. Could that Fail Mary be that for the Bears? Is this something that they're not going to recover from? You know, we talked about you can't make one game turn into two. Well, I'll tell you what. If it turns into three against the Patriots, and look at that number, David. They started off as a touchdown favorite. It's all the way down to 5.5. That's a pretty big move. We're going to talk to Joe O about that in a few minutes. That's a pretty big move. And I'm just worried now that there is a massive hangover for the Bears from that Fail Mary.
There's too much talk about team meetings. I mean, I do understand what Dustin's saying. I feel like every team has a team meeting. But I feel like when you publicly always mention it, and I know they're getting asked the question, but at the same time, I take a team meeting or players-only meeting, those things, as a point of when it's public, okay, we're falling apart. And they already had two losses already, and it doesn't look good right now. I feel like, to me, I don't want to hear no more talk. Unless they get asked, of course, after today, they shouldn't get no more talk about team meetings no more. I shouldn't hear the coordinators talking about team meetings. I shouldn't on Friday. I shouldn't hear that either. So this should be the last, because it's the 24-hour rule that Eberflus says. So after 24 hours, let's turn the page.
I was surprised. He offered it, and he offered that other players stood up after Matt Eberflus addressed the team. So that sounds like it was more than one speaker.
And to me, that to me shows that this team is really not over the Fail Mary. This team is some players on the team. I'm not saying DJ Moore are probably questioning the coaches. And that's probably the bigger problem at hand.
It's better over here.
Now at T-Mobile, get four 5G phones on us and four lines for $25 a line per month when you switch with eligible trade-ins. All on America's largest 5G network.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees and $10 device connection charge. Phones via 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. Bill credits end if you pay off devices early. See T-Mobile.com.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy, shipped nationwide.
The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Dave Wunstead hanging out with Mully and Haw on 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. We're here with Coach Wunstead. And, Dave, so much to go over. We'll get to the college stuff, but I'm just curious, David, you brought up a couple of really interesting points. You know, when you look at Matt Eberflus and where he's at right now, I was telling David, we did the post-game show. We took calls, and that, like about the first 14, 15 all said, fire the coach. I mean, it was incredible how people seem to have turned on him. And he is probably doing the right thing in terms of staying with Shane Waldron with a game against New England coming up. You would hope that they can beat the Patriots at home, given the fact that if the season ended today, they'd have the number one pick. That's the worst team in the league right now, although they got a good young quarterback too. But they're in a bit of turmoil. When you think about staying with the coordinator or staying with the play caller, I don't know how many you get as a defensive guy in charge, and you always had guys that you trusted and you knew and you could lean on, like Ron Turner, like Matt Kavanaugh. What do you think when you hear all this noise around Shane Waldron right now?
Well, I think that I'm disappointed there, because I said on this show when they hired him, I said, well, the thing that I liked about him, he was on staff with Pete Carroll. He was on staff with Bill Belichick, both defensive head coaches. So he understands, because both those guys would just soon run it every play than throw it. You know, and I'm saying that sarcastically, but my point is that if you're going to work for those guys, the running game is going to be very important to you. So I was kind of excited that he had that background. And, I don't know. We're just not seeing it. I was hoping in the last game that we would come out and do a little hurry up offense, spread everybody out.
They started well.
I know.
Then they got away from it.
Penalties killed them.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Penalties killed them again. And the movement passes, the play action, and just the numbers. Let me stop there, because it's halftime, 24 passes and 12 runs. To me, that's not balanced.
No.
That's not balanced in anybody's book. And you look at the Philadelphia Eagles, everybody's saying, oh, they've turned it around. You know, the head coach is the only guy there that's going to screw that thing up for them, in my opinion. But what they're doing offensively.
So huh? It's so true.
But what they're doing offensively, guys, they are running the ball 65% of the time.
Saquon Barkley.
And Jalen Hurts has come alive.
Yep.
All of a sudden, guys are
No turnovers.
Yes. All of a sudden, yep. David, guys are one-on-one.
And Vic Fangio runs that defense.
Their defense is
pretty good.
Caught fire. Why? They're rested.
Yep.
You know, so the big picture thing is, I would do this. If I was Flus, Eric Washington knows your defense. I would give him more responsibilities this week. And I don't know how much time Flus is spending in those offensive meetings. And I'm not talking about drawing up plays, but I'm just talking
overseeing it.
Thank you. What's our emphasis? How many boots and movement passes do we have with Caleb? That's what he does best, right?
Do that more. See, Dave, I think that's a great point and a direction they should probably go. I don't trust the Bears to show any kind of grasp of common sense. I think they have a stunning lack of common sense in terms of their approach to balance, to decisions in game. So I got to ask you this. Yesterday, Kurt Warner on this station didn't have a problem with Caleb Williams still being in the game at the end of it when it was 29-9 and
he was under siege.
He was under siege. Yeah. He was under attack. As a head coach, how do you defend that? I think that was the worst decision on a day full of bad ones. But Caleb Williams in the game, exposed to injury when you're down 29-9, made no sense to me.
Yeah, I mean, what Flu said, you know, they wanted to work on the two-minute drill, but I don't know. At this point in the season, if he's in there, maybe just hand it off. And at some point in these games, it's over. You know what I'm saying? And
he's taking too many hits.
And he's
whether that's his fault or anyone else's fault, it's getting sacked six times.
And when you're behind, you're right. When you're behind like they were, and it's the end of the game, Arizona's not thinking about anything except getting into quarterback. So it's putting that much more pressure on our offensive line. You know, they could afford to take some chances and blitz, even though that's not really what they want to do a lot. you know, no. I mean, it's that was a tough one. I would have run the ball probably, or you take him out and get Bajan some work. Hell, I mean, you know, it wasn't like we were going to be able to come back and win the game at that point. It was pretty much over, you know.
Hey, we want to let you know you can join Coach Wannstedt with Mark Grody live at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan for the Four Winds Football Forecast. That's next Monday, November 11th. The event is free to the public. It starts at 6:30 p.m. our time, Central Time. It's 7:30 Eastern Time. Technically, you'll be in Michigan, so I think it's 7:30 there, but 6:30 in our hearts. And Dave will be giving a mid-season review and forecast for the rest of the season. Plus, you can get an autograph and a photo with Dave before that Monday night game. I'm sure Grody would also pose for a photo.
Oh, I'm sure. He's very photogenic.
He's a handsome man.
He is. Nice
smile. That's Monday, November 11th. Who doesn't want to go to the Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo, Michigan on 11/11? Think about it. Give me the yo.
And probably win some money, huh?
Yeah, it's bound to.
That's right. The odds are with you.
The odds are with you.
Weren't worth me.
That'll be fun, Dave. That's good stuff.
It is.
Mark's great.
Good people upper.
Dave, as a defensive coach, when you watch the Bears try to stop the run, why couldn't they? And does that just mean they are that dependent on Montez Sweat?
Well, they had, you know, the schemes that they were running. I mean, you know, they were getting hats on people now. This was not a situation where that offensive line of Arizona, from what I was watching it a couple of times, just went out there and fell on the ground. I mean, they were blocking us. They were getting the ball on the edge. You know, they were running that counter play, blocked on, kick out. And, you know, with that particular play, you got to wreck it all, in my opinion, and kick everything to the sidelines. You can't let those backs run downhill. And, you know, they just didn't execute it. I don't think that they were surprised by that play. You know, I would have to go back and watch Arizona's run game leading up to that. They were running the ball well. That's the only, you know, only thing they were really doing pretty good. But the quarterback, Kyler Murray, was averaging 8 yards a carry. So he was a big part of the run game, and he really wasn't in this game. I mean, you know, from a rushing standpoint, you know, Murray, what do you have, 6 yards rushing, you know? So he wasn't a factor like he had been, you know, two carries for 6 yards, 3 yards a carry. I'm looking at the stat thing right here
didn't
now.
Didn't need it,
which is a tough deal there. Yep. And they averaged six and a half yards a carry almost, right. And we were 3.5 yards. I mean, you got no chance there. No chance.
Can I ask you a big picture question philosophically? You were in the unique position of you worked for the McCaskies. You were the Bears head coach in a season where maybe you started to struggle at midway through it. Maybe you heard calls for your job.
Oh, 100%.
But always there was this, the mantra, and it was true then and it's true now. The Bears have never fired a coach in season.
Right.
What is your best understanding of why that is? Because you look around the NFL and there are examples. We saw it in New Orleans. We saw it in New York. We'll see it somewhere else before the season is over, I predict. Why are the Bears so different in that way? Is there something about the family tradition? What is your understanding?
You hit it, David. Everything is about the tradition of the Bears going back, obviously, to George Halas, you know, and Virginia was always, you know, she was going to follow in those footsteps and obviously George and Michael and so forth. I mean, they're in line there. So that was always the history. It was just something that they didn't want to do. I mean, the McCaskies are good people. They truly want to win. Nobody out there I know listening wants to hear that, but they do. Right. You know, they're spending money now, which was different back in the era, you know, back in the days. So they're spending money now. They're doing whatever they can do to win. But there's still a lot of those football traditional things with rule changes, with sometimes uniforms, with stadium stuff that they won't budge because that's not, you know, the Halas tradition. Yep. So they stay along those lines. That's the only answer I can come up with. And now, though, it's a little bit different. I mean, before it was always McCaskey and Ted Phillips, you know, or maybe a GM, you know. But now I think Poles has more authority than a GM's probably had during a long time. And then you got Kevin White in the mix. Kevin Warren, I'm sorry. Then you got, George McCaskey. So you got a lot more people involved now.
Is it dated?
Is
it a dated concept then?
Well, I don't know. What are we going to accomplish?
I'm asking, there's as many people who want to fire the offensive coordinator.
Honestly, who are you going to hire?
Yeah, it's
who
gonna
takes
make it
over?
Better. Eric Washington, the defensive coordinator. Come on.
He's not even calling the defenses.
Yeah.
Why not start with that before you make it to head coach? I'm serious.
It's a very good counter, but then it makes me wonder, okay, Luke Getsy gets fired in Vegas.
Yes.
They had to fire two assistant coaches last year. There's nobody qualified to be a head coach on this staff. Can Matt Eberflus hire assistant coaches?
Well, maybe he's not hiring his replacement.
Well, I just wonder about that because
I think it's a legitimate wonder.
Not with a 1-year contract, he's not. To me, that's a big deal. You know, how many assistant coaches you're going to get?
Yeah.
Where
want
the guys
to come in for a season knowing the coaches.
John Hoke is probably the most qualified at his position coaching at Hallis Hall. He's not going to take over as head coach. It's just probably because he's not a guy that's ever done that before. I don't know who the answer would be, but I think to use that as the crutch for why you wouldn't make a change probably bothers some people.
Isn't that the same thing, though, with the offensive coordinator? Because you think about it, okay, you got a guy there that called plays for Carolina. I mean, right. do you want to get right. that going? Yeah, right. No offense to anyone, but I'm just saying. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think it goes back to...
It went number one overall.
Yeah, I mean, hey, there's 9 games left. You know, if I can just try to slow this thing down a little bit, and I know right now that the train is off the tracks.
Yeah.
I'm going to agree with that. But if we can win this week... Which we should win.
If they don't win this week,
let's say we win this week. It gives us 5. Now you got to find a way to split with your last 8 games to give you 9. We said this, and I think everybody agreed here when we started this season. Oh, you know, playoffs or Flus is gone and they're a bust. And we kind of backed off that and said, you know, if they have a winning season and Caleb Williams makes strides forward, that will be enough to say, you know what? You know, we went from 7 wins to 9 wins and our quarterback, we really like the direction he's going.
And now we wonder if he'll survive the season, frankly.
Yeah,
seriously. And that has to do with the offensive line, which was not put together by Flus.
Which will be the next level of conversation and criticism. If this continues to be something trending in the wrong direction, we're going to shift our focus from who's coaching this team to who's putting the roster together and why there's continued neglect of the offensive line.
Yeah, and you know, the old expression, you know, I've said this, you know, coaches can lose a game, but don't lose the locker room.
Yeah.
If you lose the locker room, you're dead. And we've got a couple guys.
Well, DJ Moore said, never mind.
No, don't even. You're unbelievable.
I'm kidding.
But what I'm saying is you better have the right guys out there just laying it on the line. And this is critical now. You know, Flus says we've got great, relationships with our players and great rapport with them. And everybody's, I mean, this is the time we're going to be tested this week. So, this will be an issue. And this is, God, I mean, you know, did Drake May get hurt, the quarterback for the, you know, he's come, he played, he went
played,
out of the game,
yeah.
back in.
Not quite sure what his status is. He's got a higher passer rating than Caleb Williams right now.
Does he really?
Yeah.
I didn't look at that yet.
All right, let's get to the college stuff. Dave, we're going to see the first college football selection committee rankings of the new era, the 12-team playoff. I'm just curious how, and this is my biggest question, so maybe it's unfair to put it that way, but how are they going to handle SEC Big Ten teams with a loss or two versus teams that are from conferences where they're not playing near as tough a schedule? I just want to know, are they looking for the best teams in the country? Do they want to find the best team, or are they looking for the teams that are the cleanest?
Well, number one, they're supposed to evaluate off of film, the committee, okay? Mm. And we don't know how
That's
tough. I agree.
That's tough.
But I'll tell you what, brand does carry weight.
Sure.
I mean, I'm not so sure that Indiana is not one of the three best teams in the country right now.
But they haven't beaten anybody.
But they don't have the brand. They don't have the brand, and they haven't beaten a top team. Yeah. The best thing that happened to the Big Ten, you know, in working for them, I'm real familiar with them, is, I hate to say this, is Penn State losing. Because Penn State has a chance now to, you know, the conversation would have been, think about this, people. If a Penn State would have beat Ohio State, and let's just say Ohio State would run the table, they're going to be two-loss team.
Yeah.
Now, their two losses are going to be good losses. I still think that the committee would say they're one of the 12 best teams in the country. They should.
Yes.
Okay, so put Ohio State in that box. If Clemson, who lost the game last week, if Clemson loses another game, is Clemson one of the 12 best teams? I don't know.
But
right?
If you watch the tape, you can't watch the tape and pick 12. Because yeah. you have to have Boise State. You've got to have BYU. Those aren't teams that are going to jump off the tape and tell you that they're one of the 12 best teams in the country.
Okay, so Alabama is at LSU this Saturday.
Yep.
They both have two losses.
Yep.
Does that mean...
I think three losses, you're out.
So it's an elimination game on Saturday.
Yes, absolutely.
Now that's awesome.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It is awesome.
That's going to happen. And I think the Big Ten is going to get four teams in. You know, I mean, they're going to get four. Oh, yeah. I mean, hey, Oregon, arguably the best team in the country.
Oregon.
Ohio State, Indiana, Penn State.
Four.
Okay.
What if Indiana ends up losing at Ohio State?
They
still get in?
Oh, yeah. One loss, yes.
But they haven't played anybody.
Boise State,
the only big game they have.
Brigham Young, Notre Dame. I'm running out of fingers.
How do you handle Notre Dame?
Notre Dame wins out. They're in.
Okay.
They're in.
One loss Notre Dame. Okay.
Yeah.
They can't lose.
I don't think the one loss teams, I think that's an easy decision for the committee. I think it gets down to there's going to be a couple two-loss teams, guys.
Yeah.
Couple two-loss teams that are going to be in the conversation. And
they're going to be so disappointed in the SEC that if they have a team that
is Alabama
three losses,
is out.
That's my point.
Yep.
They have a team that good that changed coaches and now is eliminated.
Ole Miss got two losses right now, right? They're 7-2. Texas A&M's got two losses.
Right.
Okay.
Alabama beat Georgia. In their top of the. I'm sorry.
How about your Panthers?
Oh God, they got.
I know.
They got. I mean,
sorry.
Embarrassed. I'm looking right
too
here.
Too soon.
SMU.
Too soon, Dave.
SMU is right on the cusp of getting in.
They got one loss.
They got one loss, and Pitt was ranked.
Yeah, that's a good
18th,
win.
And they crushed Pitt.
Is the college football playoff? does it have room for Cinderella? I don't know.
No, because if Cinderella's in the SEC,
you know the Cinderella.
That's not Cinderella.
You know the Cinderella. It's going to be just like in the NFL. The wild card. It's going to be that. That's going to be that 10th, 11th, or 12th team that gets in,
and then has to
go on the road.
Yeah, and then wins.
And then wins out.
Gets hot and stays healthy.
And gets healthy and gets hot. And wins the championship, David. That's gonna be the Cinderella
team. That's fun.
So you're picking the Bears this weekend?
I'm picking the Bears.
Yeah, make it sure.
I'm staying with them. I'm staying with them. Yes.
Up to the bitter end.
Up to the bitter end.
It's hard to understand why, but you are.
Up to the bitter end of this game.
You're staying with them.
Let's one at a time. Yeah. One at a time this week.
That's great stuff. Coach, you're the best. Thank you. We appreciate it.
Yeah,
that's
Dave.
Coach Watts.
John Heyman, insider for MLB Network.
Chicago is watching carefully, no question about it.
New York Post columnist, Curb Your Enthusiasm enthusiast.
You hate people. Well, I hate people individually, but I love mankind.
John Heyman with Mully and Haw.
I'm going to endorse the point where I say you never know with the Cubs, but I'm going to retract the I like the White Sox.
On 670 The Score.
You're listening to a Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric Football Friday presented by your local Ford dealers in IDOT. It's not a game, Illinois.com. And on this Football Friday, we'll talk some Bears with John Heyman, but he is here from the MLB Network and also from the New York Post. But we'll talk baseball, but a little Bears mixed in, maybe a little Northwestern football. Good morning, John. Welcome in
Good
studio.
Good morning. What a setup you have here. It's absolutely beautiful. Like,
Prudential. I can see now the $8,000 I'm paying for my car insurance, where it goes. Good for them.
It's nice. You should see the health club.
Yeah. Oh, my
goodness. It's one of the nicest things about this
building. I want to move in.
It's on the 11th floor. It is a tremendous asset here, and it's a great place to go after every show. So, hey, I'm going up there in about
business. I missed
10:30.
That.
Let's go. Yeah,
absolutely.
You are in your Northwestern.
Yes. Parents weekend.
Three-quarter zip. Your daughter Maya is a freshman at Evanston.
Yes, very exciting. She loves it. It's terrific. We met her for dinner last night, Evanston. It's very great and nostalgic to be back in Chicago, where I went to school. Also, it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling.
I don't think it's a coincidence that they had Parents Weekend on a weekend they're not playing football.
Yeah, well, usually don't they schedule a bad team? I don't know.
I don't know. I like David Braun. He's a reigning Big Ten Coach of the Year.
Yes.
But I just think this might not be accidental. It's very good scheduling problem. Keep everybody upbeat. Keep everybody, have nobody asking the question, we're paying how much for that?
Well, you know what? The 4 years I was there, they won four games. So they won one game my freshman year against Wyoming. They didn't win until I was a senior, and I think they won three games, broke a big losing streak. I don't remember if it was 33, 34, whatever it was. So I think a team that wins 3, 4, 5 games is a great team. I'm pretty happy with it. But not all the parents actually went to Northwestern and saw the devastation of the football team.
They really have a nice makeshift temporary stadium they played in this year. On the lakefront, it's a tremendous distraction because you can find yourself looking at the views while you're watching the game, but they have not had the greatest of seasons. They're kind of right in the middle, and David Braun has his hands. So we didn't want to talk Northwestern football, though. You are here coming back from the GM meetings in San Antonio, Texas. So I think you're in Chicago, so we want to know about what you might have heard about, A, the White Sox ability to move Garrett Crochet, or B, the Cubs and how active you expect them to be. There was a report or some chatter about Owen Casey, one of the top prospects in the Cubs system, being bandied about his name and possibilities. Let's start with the Sox, though. How realistic is it that Garrett Crochet will be traded before spring training?
Oh, I think it's very realistic. I think it was a little bit of a surprise. He wasn't traded at the deadline, but it was that innings issue that was bothering other teams, and they didn't get what they wanted to get. And I don't blame them for not trading him. I actually think they're going to do better now, even with only 2 years to go. I say only. That's pretty good. Acquiring team gets an outstanding left-handed pitcher, 2 years to go. Who's going to make very little in arbitration because of the injuries in the past. So, I think they should be able to get a haul. My understanding is they got many offers before, Dodgers, Padres, too, I know about. They were not close. They were not great offers. My understanding is the Dodgers offered Gavin Lux. We saw him in the World Series a bit. He was their starting second baseman still, but we hear now Mookie Betts is moving back to the infield, and we know what that means. He's moving to second base. So, I mean, Gavin Lux is already probably going to be out of a job with the Dodgers. So that's the Dodgers know what they're doing. You trade with the Dodgers, you're trading with a shark, right? It's not easy.
You're trading with a team that just gave you Miguel Vargas, and I don't think you're very happy with that trade if you're a Sox fan right now. Small sample size, but was not the guy that you think was worth unloading Michael Kopech and Eric Fetty. And that's what you got in return.
No, it doesn't look good. I mean, they got two other minor leaguers, but I mean, what did Vargas hit? 104, 114 or something?
It's
not even mentionable, really, right. But I just mentioned it. I talked to Dodger people up there at the World Series, and they said they thought he would hit. They didn't know they had a position. And you need a position, too. So even if he hits, he's got to have a position. So I'm not sure exactly what's going on with that, but they do believe that he will be a hitter. So, that's important. That should be good. But yeah, off to a terrible start with that.
I look at a team like the Orioles as they're going to lose Corbin Burnes. They're going to go into next season after really a disappointing end to this one and feeling like maybe they need to do something to bolster their rotation or their pitching staff in general, however you use Garrett Crochet. They also have the prospects in the pipeline, positional talent, is what Chris Getz wants for the White Sox. They don't need necessarily pitchers. They have a lot of young, promising pitchers. But maybe the Orioles are a good fit because they do have the kind of prospects that the Sox might want.
Absolutely. I mean, if Crochet's the best guy out there, and he might be, we don't know what the Marlins are doing. The Marlins may be in the same kind of situation of trading young pitching to get positional players. So we'll see if they do that. But As of now, Crochet's the best starting pitcher out there available. So, and obviously the Orioles have the best young positional talent. So I think that would be great if they could make a deal with the Orioles. They're not going to get Jackson Holliday, even though he didn't hit. He hit a little bit better than Vargas, but not much. So they're not trading him, though. I mean, he should be a star at some point. They say they're not worried, but he obviously did not have a good first year. They have a lot of good young players, and that should be the team that they match up with. I think that's a good point.
Chris Getz, the general manager, entering his second season on the job, still relatively new to the role. He hires Will Venable, who was... John, he comes with great credentials, hired by Theo Epstein, worked with and for Jed Hoyer in San Diego and in Chicago, sat next to Alex Cora in Boston and Bruce Bochy in Texas. We interviewed him last week on the show, bright, charismatic, really, it's easy to get enthused about everything that he says. It's a tough job to inherit, but let's face it, he could lose 100 games and still be improved by 21. And you look at he's making the rounds. He was on the Chicago lead on the Chicago Sports Network last night. He's making a strong first impression. What do you know about him, and what were people saying about this hire?
Well, first of all, Mully's not here, so I will say it. They will lose 100 games, 100-plus games. I don't think there's any question about that. Right. I think this is a real coup for the White Sox. I think they did great here. This is a guy who turned down interviews with the Mets and other teams previously. It's a little bit of a surprise that he was willing to go to the White Sox. He'd interview with the Marlins. Similar type situation. He obviously picked the White Sox over the Marlins. The Marlins would have hired him, obviously. He's got great credentials. Princeton man as well. I don't know if that matters. Most of the managers are not Ivy Leaguers, but hey, it doesn't hurt. I think he's terrific. I think they did a great job there.
Why do you think that he turned down the Mets last year and then would take the White Sox job this year? That doesn't seem like... Was this, there aren't very many openings available. Was it just a matter of, I better strike now while things are hot?
Here's what I think. I think everybody assumed he was the heir apparent because he did go to Princeton with Chris Young, and he's obviously a very good coach with great potential to be a manager. Everybody assumed he was the heir apparent to Bruce Bochy, and Bruce Bochy did not like retirement, so I'm not sure he's going to retire anyway, but the Texas Rangers just hired Skip Schumacher.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
So, they know, he probably knew that Skip Schumacher coming in, he's now the heir apparent, right? I mean, he did the best job that we've seen in the last 20 years.
I can't believe the Sox didn't talk to him or really hire him.
They did talk to him, but okay. He pulled out weeks ago.
Because of the scope of the job?
Because they're not going to win. Yeah, he'd rather wait and join a big market team that's got, you know, good players and has shown that they're going to win than go to a team that's going to lose 100, 110 games. I mean, that's why I say it's a coup for the White Sox to have gotten Venable, but I think Venable probably saw the handwriting on the wall. He figured he was the heir apparent, probably correctly at that point, and then he probably heard that they were hiring Schumacher, who got the Marlins to the playoffs. It's the best managing job anybody's done in the last 20 years, and he's the heir apparent now.
The process included, I think, as many as 60 names, whittled down to 20, down to 10. In terms of, you've covered a lot of job searches, does that seem overly exhaustive or just exhausting?
It sounds like a lot to me, but look, I think they got a great guy for the situation. They got a guy that's going to grow with them. He's not going to come in and be Francona right away, but I think it's a good fit, and I give them credit. Yeah, I mean, I believe it. I'm sure they throw out every name they can think of, but and some of them are probably crazy. Probably there were only 20 that were legitimate candidates, and I think they came up with a very good one.
I always wondered if David Ross was one of those names, and when we talked to Will Venable, I asked him about David Ross possibly being one of his or the bench coach for the White Sox. David Ross still has a very good reputation in this town, very good reputation, I think, around the league. He was offered the Yankees bench coach job a year ago, turned it down. The Cubs were still paying him. What do you think about Rossi getting back into either the dugout as a bench coach in a role like that, or is he going to be heading back to broadcasting or maybe not heading back at all?
Yeah, I mean, I think he did a good job with the Cubs. That's my opinion. I think he should get a managing job. I did hear that he interviewed for the Orioles bench job, and maybe he'll take that. I don't know. I would assume that they would offer it to him. I mean, certainly overqualified for that. I mean, I'm not surprised the White Sox, they didn't hire a Cub I don't want to say reject, but a Cub left over, right? They've tried that before, and it hasn't always worked out exactly right.
Ricky Renteria was a guy that probably didn't get a fair shake with the Sox.
No, he didn't get a
fair shake. He was a Cub reject.
He didn't get a fair shake in two places, but he made a nice salary as a manager.
He's ever going to come back to baseball, you think?
No, I think, you know, there's certain guys, I think that's probably it. I mean, he seemed like a placeholder, you know? Is that a career to be a placeholder until they find someone they really like?
Yeah.
It's unfortunate, probably unfair. But that's probably the reality.
You think it'd be a step down? I mean, Rossi's got to get back into it at some point to become – is his next job going to be as a manager? Do you think he's holding out for that? Because you could see Brandon Hyde, who he worked with in Chicago with the Cubs as well, in Baltimore, making sense. That's why I thought Will Venable, who worked for him with the Cubs, making sense as well. So I could see both those situations being conducive to David Ross getting back into the grind, back into the game, getting his name out there.
Yeah, I mean, you could do that as an announcer, too, and that's probably a higher-paying job and a lot easier job than being the bench coach. But, you know, look, I'm not a baseball player or coach or whatever. Guys who want to be a manager, maybe they think it's better for their preparation, to enhance their potential as a manager. I don't know. To me, it seems easier just to do it through broadcasting, and he's a very good broadcaster as well. But I do think the Orioles would probably hire him if he's willing to go. I'm a little surprised. I heard his name a little bit with Miami. Maybe that comes to fruition, but it doesn't sound like he's getting it there.
Cincinnati
would
have made sense, but Terry Francona became available.
You can't argue with Terry Francona.
Cannot.
No.
Not at all. What was the main purpose of, or every year, the GM meetings, they precede the owners' meetings and the winter meetings and all those things. What gets accomplished at the GM meetings?
Well, they're just kind of laying the groundwork for the deals, and, you know, they check in with the players and the teams that they match up with. And, you know, I felt like this year it was a little more active, that there was actually bidding, that there were actually offers made and progress made. And, you know, we may see some of these big guys go off the board a little sooner than we, you know, expect. I mean, obviously, Scott Boras has taken his clients into spring training many times. That's not going to happen with Juan Soto. The owners are going out there to visit him next week. And, you know, he may have a deal before the winter meetings, and certainly probably should at the winter meetings at the latest.
Generalizing, but is this free agent period Juan Soto and everybody else, given how he's going to get what he gets because the numbers make that seem like a very sound investment? You're going to win a World Series maybe, or get to the World Series if you have Juan Soto, and the numbers can justify that. The price can just be justified. But after that, do you expect a relative decline in salaries because of the problems throughout baseball with RSNs and the way that affects the revenue streams for respective teams?
Well, it's like probably the rest of the country. The rich are going to get richer, and the middle class and the lower are going to probably suffer. Yeah, the smaller market teams that have these RSNs, that I think they're certainly concerned about their financial situations at the very least, at least in the short term. Long term, streaming may pay off more. I don't know. But in the short term, they do seem to be concerned. But the big teams that have their own stations, the Yankees, the Mets, you know, all these teams that have great TV situations, the Dodgers, Red Sox, Toronto, they're going to spend big. So the rich are going to get richer, the middle class are going to get poorer, and the lower class are really going to get poorer. That's the way I look at it. I did my, for the New York Post, predictions of the contracts, and Juan Soto, in my prediction, got three times more than the next guy. That's exactly, and I didn't do it on purpose as I'm thinking about it now. $630 million was my prediction for him. Corbin Burns was next at $210 million. So,
where did you have those guys landing?
Well, I think Soto... I think, you know, the Yankees are probably the favorite, but I don't think they're as big a favorite as other people think. The Mets are certainly in there. I think the Blue Jays are a threat. I really do. Now, if he wants to go for the most money, could end up in Toronto. Some guys won't want to go to Canada. I don't know. The Dodgers, they're always going to be a threat. That Ohtani deal was genius. It is the gift that keeps on giving. It's $700 million, but the Dodgers people are like, you know, it's so deferred that it's not $70 million a year. $68 million of it's deferred. It's actually worth about $30 million, depending on how much they make. And Mark Walter, who runs the team, runs Guggenheim, they do very well, right? So if they make 10, 11%,
local guy,
it's, right, $30 million a year. And they're making a lot more than that in sponsorships and endorsements. There are two Asian airlines that are now sponsoring. I don't know what the Angels were doing, why they didn't accept this deal, because He's a creature of habit. From what everybody says, he might have gone back to the Angels. Is he happy with the Dodgers? I would think at this point he's pretty happy with the Dodgers. But I don't know what they were doing, not accepting that. The Toronto was willing to do it. San Francisco, Dodgers, I'm not sure. We still don't have the answer whether the Cubs willing to do it. It's the greatest deal in baseball history for the, from the team standpoint.
Speaking of the Angels, you see they added Kyle Hendricks.
They did, yes.
With a one-year, $3 million contract. That's not a lot. Their expectations will be low. But I like it because it gives him a chance to return home. They drafted him in the 39th round, I think, back in 2008 or something. And I think when he was in high school and he went to Dartmouth and became the professor and all those things, now he's a big part of Cub lore. But nice to see a good guy going out on his terms.
Yeah, great guy. I hope he does well. And, you know, he might. I love to see guys who throw 85, 87 and still
not many left.
Not many. Jose Quintana throws 91 and we're all like kind of laughing at him like 91 and he's getting away with 91 used to be average.
He's a free agent too.
Yes.
Isn't he always a free agent?
Okay.
How many teams now? Like five teams.
He's had a lot of teams. Well, he had that big Chicago to Chicago trade.
That was a big one.
He's had a good career.
Whatever happened to those guys? Yeah. Eloy.
I know. Yeah. Eloy did not.
He's now... The Orioles let him go, right? They DFA'd him. He's out of baseball.
Yes, he didn't. They didn't pick up his option, right?
Good morning, Bruce. How are you?
Good morning. I'm doing great, David. Here in Texas, Cubs and White Sox busy talking to other teams, agents. Talking about free agents. Where do you want to begin today?
I want to begin with the news earlier in the week that was a little surprising, I believe. Maybe your reaction, I'm curious about. Cody Bellinger opts back in with the Cubs. What was your reaction, and what does that do to the Cubs' offseason plan?
Well, I think it solidifies their lineup to a certain degree. $30 million is what he opted into. We're going to talk to Scott Boras here in the meetings in Texas here today, probably 2 hours, talk about Cody's decision to come back and what it was based on. But for the Cubs, I think it gives them that left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup that they need. But it also means that they can't redirect the $30 million that was part of his contract coming off of a mediocre year for him. It wasn't a great year. It wasn't an awful year. Again, injury-plagued where he missed over 30 games. But you need really good players. Bellinger's a good player that plays four positions. So I think it helps them in a lot of ways. In other ways, the creativity to make their lineup better than what it was last year will be a little difficult for Jed Hoyer, who talked to us yesterday at length, both on and off the record, about where the Cubs are at.
Bruce, with Seiya Suzuki now becoming the designated hitter, if they don't make any changes, do you expect them to be creative in the trade market? Do you expect them, Suzuki, to maybe be somebody that they dangle if they can get him to waive his no-trade clause? How active and aggressive do you think Jed Hoyer and Carter Hawkins will be in seeking trades that change the mix and complexion of this lineup?
Well, first of all, David, you say, they can get him to waive the no-trade clause. How do you do that, okay? How do you go to a player and say, we want to trade you, we want to take away one of your rights here? You have to offer him something, don't you? What is in it for him to waive his right of a no trade? The same thing with in left field, when you have Hap, who has the same thing. It's like, what is the incentive for the player to waive a no trade clause other than hearing, well, we might want to trade you? Do you take it as, are you offended by it and you say, okay, trade me, I don't want to be a part of your team? How does it impact him? So it's a difficult process. Unless you're offering him another year and you're taking the chance that, on both him and Hap, that they're playing up to their abilities the way they were, because, again, you don't know if you can trade him or not. So it's a difficult process. They're really locked up with their lineup, David. You identified it correctly. They don't have a lot of movement, especially now with Horner and having his surgery on his hand, they do not know exactly when he's going to be able to return.
Thank you. You guys have covered that well on Inside the Clubhouse. I think it's been largely overlooked, but Nico Horner's surgery and injury to that hand affects his trade value and maybe what they're able to do in terms of pursuing a deal, because they don't know how healthy he's going to be, right?
Yeah, well, exactly, David. I mean, he was the most obvious guy that would be traded. And not that he's a bad player, not that they don't value him, but other teams do. Okay, so how do you improve? You improve by trading people that you have in your mind or in your organization duplications of. They think, you know, that Matt Shaw might be that. They think James Triantos might be that. They have really good young infielders coming in the organization. How do you get them in there, and what value do you get back for a very good player like Horner, who does not have no trade clause and is coming off of a good year, not a great year, but he, you know, it was revealed by Jed Hoyer, David, that he played at least half of the season with this damaged hand. So do you have an even better feeling about how good he is and how well he played, despite the fact that he was hampered over half the year.
Talking with Bruce Levine, our baseball expert, down in San Antonio at the GM meetings here on The Score. Bruce, let's go to the White Sox. Will Venable made a great impression yesterday on Mully and I because of the way that he had just had energy, charisma, a bit of a vision, and you like what you heard. I wonder this, too. We asked him about surrounding himself with experience on the bench. David Ross's name came up, and I could almost hear him smile because it seemed like he liked the idea. He and Rossi have a good relationship, as you know, from their time together with the Cubs. Is that a realistic option for David Ross, and do you think he wants to get back in a dugout?
Well, I like the idea. I don't know how badly David wants to get back in. You know, certainly David's a tremendously talented guy that can be a coach, a manager again, which is what I'm sure he wishes to be, and also a terrific analyst on television. So I think David will have his options here after sitting out a year. I think it would be a tremendous hire for not just for Venable, but for the White Sox organization to have someone of David's experience and a plumb, the guy that can, he did nothing really wrong in his time with the Cubs, right? He wasn't Craig Counsell, okay? Just like Ricky Renteria wasn't Joe Maddon. Those were the sexier names. They got passed by. They got picked. So David would be a terrific addition to the Chicago White Sox. As to whether that happens or not, we'll find out. Both teams have a lot of coaches to name over the next week. I think we'll hear next week or two where both the Cubs and White Sox start naming their coaches. But the White Sox are the most popular team in San Antonio here, David, as far as Chris Getz having meetings with other teams. He said that he was, preparing to be able to talk to a lot of teams here, but he was mildly surprised as to how many teams want to talk to him about Garrett Crochet. And why wouldn't they, right? One of the better stories in baseball for the worst team in baseball. How do you do that? How do you get yourself over that? And with a favorable contract of probably about $4.5 million this year, David, and maybe tops at 8 or 9 next year, he is somebody that other teams will very definitely want to give up more talent for because they have him for 2 years and they have him at a very good rate. So he's a very marketable player, obviously, for the White Sox, and they're going to be listening. I think he'll be traded. You know, I don't know if it'll be before the winter meetings coming up the 10th of December, but I think he'll be traded before the first of the year.
You've got a story on 670thescore.com about what the White Sox may get in return in terms of a position player or players. What do you think you're hearing is the going rate for a guy like Garrett Crochet under control, potential ace and or closer, and he's going to be able to be very selective, I think, if you're Chris Getz. What are we talking about? 3 prospects, Bruce?
Yeah. Well, again, it depends on the organization, right? Different, you know, you might have team A might have a grade 1, 3, 5 in their system as ranked players. They're only ranked in their system. That doesn't make them, you know, you look at the top 100 of MLB pipeline if you want to really see what they're all about. So it just depends who they're trading with. And Getz underline that, the idea that you have to be trading with a team that, that has the players that you want. And their hard work is right now and has been since last July when they were hitting the trade deadline and they were getting active questions about Crochet being traded. They have to know those other organizations' minor league systems better than those teams do. And that's their charge. They have to be on top of it. The best and the brightest of the White Sox front have to really know wrong when it comes to trading for a Garrett Crochet. They just cannot move him and hope that three players are good enough. They're going to have to be top, as you said, top three players in a good organization. You know, again, you always go back to the Dodgers. You always go back to Baltimore, teams that are that have been loaded with good minor league players. Those are the things that you watch right now.
Well, we got a minute left, Bruce, but what was your biggest takeaway from your Will Venable conversation? Because I was struck by how charismatic he was. Didn't necessarily expect that, but he certainly, you could see why people find him likable, relatable, and easy to understand.
Well, I got to talk to him yesterday here at the meetings, and he said, I said, why did you come to the meetings? You know, there's six White Sox executives busy doing their work to try to make trades and talk to free agents. He goes, this is my opportunity to really get to know the front office and the people around it. I need to spend the offseason getting to know the organization, getting to know the players, being ready for my job, and that's going to take me full time to really get on top of this. You just don't come from another organization, fall into a job, and you're manager. He said it's going to take a lot more than that, and I'm prepared to know everything about this organization, the people in it, when I take this job starting in the spring.
Great stuff, Bruce. Have a safe trip, a productive one, and look forward to talking to you next time.
Thanks, David. Have a great day.
Bruce Levine, the Score's baseball expert and host of Inside the Clubhouse every Saturday, 9 to 11, right here on the Score.
It's Grody time, and that means it's time for Mark Grody with Mully and Haw.
Bears.
On 670 The Score.
Welcome back. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Mully is out today, but we are still finding the time for one of the best segments of this show every Friday. And Mark Grody, like all of our guests, joins us on the Aturo Hotline. Aturo, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Good morning, Mark. How are you?
Just thinking, it blows my mind. It's palm to the forehead. It's befuddling that the things that I was hearing from people yesterday when I was filling in for you and Haw, along with Ruthie Polinsky, your friend and mine.
I am Haw.
That, yeah, you Haw? This is Haw?
I am Haw. You're filling in for Mully and Haw.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said you and Haw.
Oh, me and Haw. Oh.
But we digress. Go ahead.
Yeah, boy, did I digress. Anyhow, what I'm hearing from people is run the football. Ready? Run the football and get the football to your tight end. And, hey, I know there's nuances to it, but that's the same breakdown that occurred with every single quarterback previous. I'm talking about the drafted ones. Mitch Trubisky, same thing. Came out flinging the football. Looks like we might have a guy here. No, stop it. You must run the ball more. You must be more conservative. You must take away half of the field. Justin Fields, same thing. Let him use his legs. He can't pass. Hand the ball off. You want us to do? Okay, we'll hand the ball. Luke Getsy is like, that Green Bay game I always think of. Hand the ball off. And that's what they did for the entire game. Now we are at that point again with the Bears and this quarterback. I know it's different. I know it's a different quarterback. I know it's early. And I'm with you, by the way, Haw. I still think Caleb Williams is going to be great. Like, that is not dented for me. But we're at that point again,
well,
man.
Don't let it get there, because I think that's lazy. And I don't want to call people lazy. I think that's too easy to do. Let me put it that way. But I understand why people are going that direction, because of it's almost out of habit, Mark. It's almost like, well, this guy is not working out. He's been overhyped and he's underdelivered. So there must be ways to remedy this. And, oh, let's go back to our old ways and slice the field in half and make it easier for him. No, I think this. He's got to be better, but you also can do something schematically to run an NFL offense the way we were promised. This was supposed to be not necessarily the simplified version of everything that you want in an offense, but this was supposed to be something that was sophisticated enough to confuse defenses because you had this quarterback with all the arm talent. Do that better.
Yeah, I agree with the part that, yeah, this is supposed to be sophisticated enough to confuse defenses. I think part of the conflict is with everybody, with Caleb Williams, with Shane Waldron, with just the powers that be, and let's just leave it at that for right now, and Caleb Williams is, that they want exactly what you want, what I want, what the fans listening want, and that is a representative downfield passing game. That's what Caleb Williams did in college. He got away with all the things that he's not necessarily getting away with right now because of the elevation and talent that he's dealing with. But that's what, when Shane Waldron and all the criticisms are valid of him, Shane Waldron and his offensive staff and Matt Eberflus as well, and then I'll throw Ryan Poles in there, what they wanted to see out of this offense is passing down the field. Everybody want, what's the identity of this team going into the season? The identity of the team going into the season was those three wide receivers, Rome Odunze, Keenan Allen, and DJ Moore. So they wanted to make this, like, use those stars, and I think that's part of why. That's part of why Cole Kmet has been left out of the party. Not that they, we know how talented and complete of a player he is, but when he is open there and for an outlet for Caleb Williams, he is. And we praise, like I was thinking about this during the preseason, one of his first throws where you had, I don't remember who the tight end was, I think it was maybe Gerald Everett in a preseason game, was like wide open for an easy, you know, throw and catch on a third down. Instead, he throws it 10 yards to DJ Moore for the first down. And we all celebrated that. Mm-hmm. We all celebrated that moment. And I think it's ironic that we're talking about the tight end now. Celebrated that he, instead of taking the easy pass, he took the more daring pass and threw it, you know, not that that's too far downfield, but took the more daring pass. So I think that, and we celebrated that moment. So I think in a microcosm, that's exactly what we wanted from Caleb Williams. That's what we wanted from Shane Waldron. Unfortunately, for reasons that I haven't completely figured out, it's not working out. Now, we know that there's culpability with the quarterback. Of course, he has been inaccurate in the last 2 weeks. He is missing passes that he should make. And some of them, you know, there's not a great degree of you know, room for error on some of the passes, like the back-to-back ones in the end zone to Rome Odunze and Keenan Allen. But if he is that quarterback, he should be expected to make those plays. But I think it's my long-winded way, David, of saying they have done the things like that I want to see done ultimately with this offense, but for whatever reason, it's just not working at the moment.
All right, based on that long-winded answer and what you have heard this week from long-winded coaches, what do you expect Sunday, given that the Bears need to win this? We've talked a lot about the offense and the chemistry and the play calling, and they're going to be doing this without Andrew Billings.
I expect a slog out there. I think it's going to be I do think the Bears are going to win. I do. It's going to be a 16-13 Bears win out there. The Bears have every reason in the world to be motivated. I got to imagine that the defensive meetings, when they were watching the film, they were probably ugly. I don't know if Eric Washington is a yeller, but if there was ever a time to be yelling and motivating his guys, it was that. So I do think the defense will be obviously better based on the score that I just gave you, but I don't expect the offense to be revved up this week. And I'm just looking at these, David, if I may, not to make this answer long-winded as well, but some of the numbers offensively between the Bears and New England are way too similar. Quickly, total yards, New England 32nd, the Bears 28th. Passing yards, New England is 32nd. The Bears are 30th. Rushing yards, New England 24th. Bears 23rd. New England on third down is 25th. The Bears are 31st. Fourth down, because that's important nowadays, New England is 6th. The Bears are 10th. And time of possession, that is being dominated relative to the Bears by New England, 25th to the Bears, 16th. So I mentioned that because we keep talking about how bad New England is and how, you know, this is the team that you can beat, and they're 2-7, and if the year were to end today, they'd have the first pick. Well, guess what? Those numbers, and the Bears' defensive numbers way better than New England's, but that scares me a little when I see those numbers.
I have quickly two questions.
Oh boy,
number
I don't
one,
to be quick today, Dave.
Without looking at your depth chart that the Bears provided you, can you name two wide receivers from the Patriots?
Oh my God! I can give you Kendrick Bourne.
Okay.
Can I give you? Does that count?
Yes.
Of course that counts. The one I was going to ask if it counts, if I may, does Hunter Henry count? Did you say wide receivers?
Well, he's a tight end, but he's kind of used as a wide receiver.
He's a receiver.
Yeah,
so,
he's a receiver. All right.
And Billy Johnson, is he still a receiver?
Billy White Shoes Johnson, I think he retired years ago.
I just made up that name. Ramondre Stevenson catches passes for them.
Yes, he is. He's a receiver. He's a running
back.
I
know the valuable players on their offense.
I use that almost as mocking the point that Drake May should not outplay Caleb Williams. He's not throwing to receivers of any who are established. So I think that's a good point. Next question.
Quick.
Who gets real more quick, real quick? Who gets more targets on Sunday? Cole Kmet or Doug Kramer?
Oh my God! Look, I said this earlier. Doug Kramer will never get another target as long as he is in a Bears uniform and Shane Waldron is running the Bears. He will never, ever, 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 ever touch the football again with the Bears, because if he does and it goes bad, you can just march all the offensive staff and Matt Eberflus into a car that will take them to the fired village.
All right, final word, Grody. You heard Kyle Long. He said it on the Pushing the Pile podcast. The Bears are cooked. I ask you, Mark Grody, are the Bears cooked?
Is the definition of cooked that they're just going to like lose out? What does that mean?
I thought you were cool enough to understand that. I don't know.
I know. I understand cooked. I am cool enough. I am cool enough, first of all, to know what cooked means. But does that is that they are like, they're going to have the number one pick at the end of the season? Maybe relative to the NFL,
winning.
I don't know what Cook
They're
means.
Done winning and being competitive. And then Matt Eberflus, as a result, will be out.
No. There's no way, because this team is just – and this may ultimately may annoy people, because at this point it's rough, hard for me to think that they're going to make the playoffs. But this team is just talented enough that they're going to be – they will eventually be a middling team. The game under 500, a game over 500. If it was still a 16-game season, I'd probably say this is a 500 team. This team has – it's too good of a defense. There's still too much talent on offense. They're kind of like the Bulls in a way, if Zach LaVine ever returns, that they're just good enough that the bottom's not going to drop out. The Bears are not going to have a top five pick. I mean, you just have to, and you have to think about this team too, that although they have been bad, they do care. Like, this team cares. We've seen Bears teams and sports teams in this town that once the bottom falls out, they really don't care. I think there is enough evidence from all the guys you've heard from in the Bears locker room that I've talked to, or guys that you have talked to, Haw, on the radio, that they care enough. So, no. Kyle Long is wrong.
Great stuff, Grody. We will see you on Sunday.
I got some more things to say. No, I'm just kidding, Haw. Have a great day, brother.
Mark Grody, man of all seasons. Here at the Score, wearing a lot of different hats and wearing them all very well. And Sunday, the game is at Soldier Field, but you can join the Score at Circus Sports Illinois at Jarrett Payton's flagship on the Fox in St. Charles. Be there for the pregame show. Mully, Olin Kreutz, and Patrick Manley will be the hosts 9 to noon. And then immediate reaction on the postgame show after Chicago takes on New England this Sunday. Flagship on the Fox in St. Charles, sponsored by Circus Sports Illinois. Sports betting the way it should be.
This show is brought to you by 5-Hour Energy. Being a fan is a hands-on job, which is why we're freeing up your hands for cheering, jeering, and everything in between. With 5-Hour Energy Fan E-Pack, you'll be fully equipped to hit the tailgate with all the energy you and your fellow diehards need for rooting on the home team. No matter what, just take a shot past the rest to your entire squad and keep the good times rolling. Now available on 5hourenergy.com with the purchase of Stan the Fan 5-Hour Energy. Shipped nationwide. It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Getting help for mental health shouldn't be as hard as it is. Mindful Therapy Group is here to make your mental health journey as painless as possible. Mindful partners with thousands of licensed clinicians to find the perfect fit for you and also accepts insurance. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.